Houston Independent Media Center Radio, live on KPFT. Collective, not-for-profit media for social and economic justice. Online at houston.indymedia.org.
Hey, everyone. Thank you for starting off your weekend with us here at the Houston Indie Media Show. Of course, we want to start our show tonight by giving a shout out to the hundreds and thousands of same-sex partners in the 14 states where it was previously illegal for them to marry, of course, Texas being among them. The Supreme Court came out today in a 5-4 ruling in favor of same-sex marriage in all 50 states that we can now begin to refer to as simply marriage. It's huge. Couples are going to be able to marry immediately in Tennessee, Kentucky, Michigan, and Ohio. And while the attorney general here in Texas is dragging his feet, I'm sure many of your Facebook feeds like mine was filled today with pictures of the happy couples in various counties across the state, including Harris, where they're able to get marriage licenses and be recognized. This coming just one day after the Supreme Court of the United States ruled in favor of Obamacare by upholding the federal tax subsidies for a second time. We're going to be spending the show examining these victories, but also with us tonight, we have some people in the studio to talk about another ruling on health care, although this one not having such a happy ending. On June 9th, the Bush-appointed three-judge panel out of New Orleans came down for a second time in what has been coined the most restrictive anti-abortion legislation in the country. HB 2 slashed women's reproductive access here in the Lone Star State from 42 clinics to a mere 8, with one clinic in the Rio Grande Valley operating under an exception to the hospital admitting privileges requirement that was part of the original 2013 legislation. If you guys want to go ahead and introduce yourselves and also share what group you're with this evening.
Hi, I'm Brenda Serrato. I'm with Southern Reproductive Justice.
Hi, I'm Phil Walk, and I'm also with Southern Reproductive Justice.
Okay, Brenda, we are covering this topic on the two-year anniversary, actually, today, of when you and many other pro-choice and pro-access activists flocked to the state capitol to support Wendy Davis in her filibuster, pink Nikes and all. Take us back to that moment, and how was this piece of legislation, in spite of the temporary victory, able to eventually pass and become law?
At that moment, it was so exciting to see a Texas senator talk about, like, her abortion and her experience and how we need to have these rights cemented in our state for all women, not just for privileged women who can afford an abortion, but for all of us. That's freedom. And unfortunately, in our state, we can't find a road to there. There's so much legislation that's just put out there to restrict women as opposed to help women who need this care.
And also, you were actually in New Orleans when the Fifth Circuit handed down this ruling on June 9th. What was that like? And more or less, can you kind of summarize what the legal challenge was?
The legal challenge really was, is this an undue burden, making women wait and travel, like having all these clinics close? And should this be something that should happen in Texas, such a large state? And most women would have to travel more than 200 miles round trip. And so their thing is it an undue burden? And, you know, they decided it wasn't, even though
there are only 10 abortion clinics open in the state now.
Actually, only 8,
and
with the one exception.
Yeah, they're
in
all
the Rio Grande
west
Valley,
or east of San Antonio.
Absolutely.
And where is the clinic located that is now operating under the exception of not requiring hospital privileges? Where in the Rio Grande Valley is it located, and what kind of travel is that for women in this region that we know statistically is the most socioeconomically challenged area of the state?
This clinic is in McAllen, and they have to travel there or try to travel outside of their valley. And there are border checkpoints, and there's a lot of women who are undocumented who need reproductive health care. And we have to think about those women and what it means to them, like the challenges in their life, not just like a normal Texan woman who would just think about childcare and like mileage, fuel, like lodging. Like they have to think about whether or not they can stay in this country, you know, just to get some reproductive health care. And that's a big thing to tackle in Texas. It's something we have to think about, especially in Rio Grande Valley.
And so in terms of your work now, where do you see this struggle going? I mean, is this going to continue to be just a legal and legislative issue? And what's your organization doing to try to work among these restrictions and make sure women get the support they need to access the health care they need, but also opening up the next chapter of struggle?
Well, legislatively, like, they've appealed to the Supreme Court, so we'll wait on that for, you know, to find out what they say, how they rule. We won't know till that happens. And until then, there are a lot of opportunities for women. There's lots of knowledge. Like, there's a World Health Organization. They have a lot of opportunities and options for women who don't have them in their immediate region, be it in Africa or South America or Texas even now. Like, you know, there's safe abortion with pills. There's all kinds of things that we can do. And so right now what we have to do is what is best for us. What do women need? And not just legally, but what do we need? What can we do? And, you know, legislatively is, of course, go to the Supreme Court, find out what they say. But on a really practical level is how can we help women?
Today.
Today. Right, and we will. Today, right now, we will help women. And that's firstly, like, knowledge, education, you know, to them through means of the World Health Organization and Women on Waves. Like, there's so many different options online.
And Phil, I always love whenever I have a guy feminist here in the studio. Why is this as much a men's issue as it is a women's issue?
Well, if you, I mean, I personally consider this to be a human rights issue. And I think the, you know, if you look at the United Nations, other international groups, they would agree. And I mean, any human right is as important as another human right. And this is something that's happening right here, right now, that really affects people, everyday people. You know, it's not just something that you're reading in the news, like headlines about some atrocity that's happening overseas. I mean, this is like a atrocity that's happening in America.
And also, just to kind of go back to your point, I know also, Brenda, you are involved in terms of the struggle against what are coined crisis pregnancy centers, which pop up all the time. Can you maybe educate listeners on what crisis pregnancy centers are and why they are detrimental to women and women's reproductive health and choices?
Well, crisis pregnancy centers, or usually called CPCs, are places that provide free pregnancy tests and quote-unquote free information. It's really just a ploy to get women in, to give them a pregnancy test, and then try to convince them to not have an abortion, and or just not give them accurate information. And NARAL, who does lots of lobbying, pro-choice stuff, and education in the Valley and all throughout Texas. They did an expose last summer where they sent in some of their people in with, like, secret cameras. And, like, a lot of these women were lied to. Like, they were given ultrasounds. And they're like, oh, my God, there's your fetus. And this woman's like, I better not be pregnant. Like, I didn't know I was pregnant. So these places really don't care about these women. They just really want to
advance a ideology.
Absolutely.
And are they subsidized at all with our tax
Absolutely,
dollars?
Absolutely, they really are. It's scary. Like, we can't get any pro, like, sex ed, like, actual accurate sex ed in high schools or anything, but these crisis pregnancy centers are funded by our tax dollars.
Yeah, and they have no doctors. They don't offer birth
control. Oh, yeah,
no,
you don't have
contraception.
To be certified.
They don't even have condoms there.
Or anything to give an ultrasound. You can just be a person and give someone an ultrasound. You don't have to have any sort of certification or anything, and so that's what they do, is they provide these free pregnancy tests. And in many cases, there have been cases where women were locked in rooms and told how bad, vicious, evil they are, sinful for wanting an abortion.
Wow. And how is that possible? What's the loophole, or how does that happen where our tax dollars go to fund these sorts of institutions?
Texas? I mean, I don't know. We're so conservative here. It's really just a matter of who's in power, I think, and who it's benefiting, you know? Like, is it benefiting, like, the majority party? Absolutely. And is it not benefiting, like, people in need? Yes.
It's only hurting the most marginalized people.
Yeah,
in
I mean, I don't know the answer to that question besides power and greed and I don't know.
Class struggle.
Yeah.
Common themes here on the Houston Indie Media Show. But also in terms of your organization has some upcoming events as far as taking to the streets and organizing people around this issue. Can you share a little bit about that?
Yeah, we're organizing in solidarity with Chicago, and now Shreveport, Louisiana has like joined our solidarity. We're going to do a national CPC picket on July 11th. In Houston, it'll be outside the San Jacinto Crisis Pregnancy Center. You can't miss it. It says pregnant, need help or something. There's a number.
It's across the street from HCC.
Yeah, it's across the street, like right across, like I think it's West Alabama, between Holman and Alabama. On San Jacinto, and we'll be standing outside holding signs and also not just protesting, but having accurate information for people who need it.
Pass out to anybody who wants it.
Yeah.
And also, just so listeners know, we've had this organization before on the air, but there is the Lilith Fund if you are needing assistance. Also, I don't know how accurate they are, but I have seen pregnancy tests at the 99-cent store.
No, that's what we got. We asked like a professional who deals with reproductive health. We're like, can these 99-cent stores tests be held accurate? Can we use those? And she was like, absolutely. So those are good to go. We got some of those to provide. Because my number one question as a feminist, as an activist, is how can we provide free pregnancy tests? You know, that's like the number one. Like need, because that's why those desperate women go to those CPC centers, because they need a pregnancy test and also they need support, you know. So how can we provide that for free without being creepy and, you know, ideological? Just, this is what you deserve, let me help you. So we got some of those tests because they're accurate, and so we're more than willing to give those out, you know. I think mostly our struggle is finding a safe space to provide information. So that's what we're looking for.
Okay. And where can people learn more or get in touch with your organization as far as this July 11th protest and some of the other work that you are doing?
The July 11th protest is on Facebook. I'm pretty sure it's a public event. You can sign up. It's CPC Action, July 11th, Houston. You can find it. I can repost it. You can find my name on Facebook, Brenda Serrato. And find a link to it. Or you can look up Bill Lambert. He can have a link to it too.
Okay, excellent. Is there anything else that either one of you want to go ahead and make sure that listeners out there know as far as the work you're doing, as far as the state of women's reproductive health here in Texas, and also what's next?
We need as much help as we can get. We need voices. We need people. You know we all care, but we really got to get out there. And mostly it's for young Texan women and trans men and trans women, all of us together. We need as much information as we can get. Like, I didn't have accurate sex ed in high school. And that's pretty much what drives me now. It's like, we need that. And having, like, a healthy sex life, a pleasurable one, that's good too, without consequences as an adult. So I just want to help young Texans get to where they need to be in a good, healthy, smart way.
And I'd like to add just real quick, the Supreme Court has kind of a spotty record on abortion rights, even though we have Roe v. Wade. Since then, there have been, I think, almost two dozen or more cases where they kind of like slivered away at like the right to choose, more or less. And so this is not like a fight that'll just be over, like, you know, when the Supreme Court comes down with a ruling on this, if when they finally do. But instead, it's it's an ongoing struggle, and it's not going to, probably not going to be solved at the Supreme Court. I mean, they're just too iffy about it, it seems.
Well, and in general, the Supreme Court very much is at least somewhat influenced when you look historically at the court of public opinion and what's going on in streets and what people are saying publicly. And abortion is one of those things that still has a stigma to it sometimes. There's a lot of women who have had abortions but are not public about it or are not willing to be public about it, and for a lot of different reasons, and be it, you know, cultural or religious and so forth. And so, you know, the more we stay quiet, the more they are able to just slowly chip away at this access.
It's important to note that 1 in 3 women has had an abortion today. And 60% of those women are mothers. You know, it's not just some random person off the street. It's someone's mother. And she's asking to, she's demanding for her choice. For her children, for herself, for her family.
Okay. Thank you. And one more time, what's the name of your organization so people can go ahead and Google it and find out more?
Southern Reproductive Justice.
Or SoRePro for short.
SoRePro. Okay. Thank you so much.
Sure.
Okay. And as we said, there was a historic ruling that we all know about that we're all celebrating. And we wanted to, being one of the first new shows on the heels of that, be able to really kind of have a roundtable discussion. And prior to going on the air, Courtney, you brought up a very interesting point about, obviously, this is a gay rights issue for those of us here at KPFT and many other progressives, but it is not in terms of the whole question of gay marriage. There was some capitalist incentives, too, around that battle. Can you talk about that?
Sure. Thank you for this great interview and inviting me to talk on this. You know, I think that the issue of same-sex marriage has gotten really overclouded with religious overtones. And I would like to just remind everybody what this is all really about. Originally, this whole concept of same-sex couples being able or having to be married had to do with insurance. That's why the whole push for same-sex marriage came about, is because same-sex couples were not able to claim each other on their insurance. They weren't able to claim, they weren't able to buy houses together. They weren't able to have life insurance policies. When one of them passed away, they weren't able to, you know, even though together in life they built things, they weren't able to retain that because they were not able to be married. And so the original lawsuit was out of Ohio, I believe, with a same-sex couple that one of the members of that couple passed away, and the other was unable to, you know, do anything, wasn't able to get money, nothing. Like, family came and took all of the possessions. And so the insurance companies were the real push in this, and I think that is extremely missed. The push was, you know, and the way that they dealt with this case was like, well, you know, if you guys could be married, then, you know, we wouldn't have an issue. And so it was in that time, in maybe the late 80s, early 90s, that this whole push for same-sex marriage came about. And so I think we would be really remiss to forget history. This is not just because it is out of love, but there was a reason why it had to come about. And I know for me, I think it's really difficult, especially in this state. Same-sex couples aren't able to adopt children together, which creates a lot of issues in the event one of that couple passes away. Then that child could possibly go back into care when they wouldn't really need to if they've been raised by two parents. So I just, you know, wanted to bring that up and bring that to the forefront as well, that we have a lot of religious overtones, people wanting to set themselves on fire and things of that nature, when if we had have made concessions for same-sex couples in the beginning and had equal rights, period, you know, in the beginning, everybody's equal, and we could claim each other on insurance or however people want to do or what you want to do, nobody'd have to set themselves on fire. And Johnny, I know that you might want to say something about the fire setters.
Has anybody set themselves on fire? I know that
we
there
keep
was
waiting and hoping, Rachel.
Yeah, for real.
But,
I'm just waiting.
You know, people need to follow through on their promises, but we'll
somewhere
see.
In a safe people. Place, probably. Surrounded by their peers.
Yeah, you know, I think, and not just on the issue of marriage equality, but we have also seen a couple of other rulings by the Supreme Court this week that give people a lot of reason to be optimistic about different issues. You know, we see even with what's going on in South Carolina over the issue of the flag. Mm-hmm. But I think the thing that that we can't forget is that sometimes it's very easy for the system and the powers that be to make certain concessions because they're so, in many ways, superficial. And, oh, you know, we can do this one real easy. You know, oh, yeah, we can take down that flag. And, you know, there are a lot of issues that we're going to win on like that. But then I think it comes back to the issues that Courtney was bringing up. When we forget those issues that on a wide variety of these questions that we're talking about, what we don't want to happen is we don't want to forget about equal pay in the workplace. You know, we don't want to forget about, yeah, okay, you can get married, but you know what? You still have issues on the job to deal with besides benefits. You still have the question of equal pay. You still have the question of job discrimination. You still have the issue of education. So while we're basking for a short time in the victories, I think we have to remember that Monday morning, we need to be back at work. And I think that in a lot of ways, when you look at the issue of choice and what's happened with that, you know, I mean, I was a student when Roe v. Wade happened. And everyone thought, okay, we're done with this issue. It's over. And
not
here
really.
We are, how many years later, still talking
was
about
it, 40 years?
Still fighting 42. For 42. The same rights and for basically the same issue that Roe v. Wade raised. Mm-hmm. So I just think that, okay, let's have a good time this weekend. I was glad that decision today.
It.
Yes, that decision came down today so that folks can really have a good time this weekend. But we've got to remember that come Monday morning, we've got to be back at work. We've got to still raise these same issues. That it's not over by any means. It's just we're moving on to the next page now.
Right. And also it's very historic, obviously, because this is the anniversary of the Stonewall riots. There was a time in our recent history where, in fact, going to a gay bar and being gay itself was worthy of a trip to the pokey or, you know, being charged as a criminal offense. We've come a long way there. Also, earlier this month, it was the 48th anniversary of Loving v. Virginia, another historic ruling in which interracial couples were able to marry. So, you know, we are making progress, but that being said, this we need to celebrate, we need to enjoy, we need to have a good time, even if the Pride Parade is taken out of the historic gayborhood. But then, like John said, Monday, we need to get back to work. And Courtney, you wanted to add something to that.
I did. I didn't want us to forget about... I didn't want us to forget about Clemente, his service that took place. And there was actually a really touching moment. It, like, brought me to tears when the new nickname, POTUS, began singing Amazing Grace. Now, culturally, that song has had a lot of, I don't know,
connotation?
Yeah, behind it. Because, you know, during the period when people in this country were enslaved, they used gospel songs to sort of code messages. So, and those messages are somehow inherently in them, even though, you know, like it's something very, like, I don't know, like, if I can explain it, but it's a very visceral feeling that you get when you hear some of these old spirituals that you know were codes for things in the past. Amazing Grace is one of those songs. So I think it was very powerful for the president of the United States to sing that song, knowing its coded history. And then, you know, he used it to bridge into this really, you know, fiery statement about how each of the victims of the shooting in South Carolina, they each got their Amazing Grace. And that was a really powerful thing. So if you haven't gotten to hear it, I was going to try to play it, but it's not cooperating. So if you haven't gotten to hear it, please take the time. It's only about a minute. It's just very, it's almost, for me, it's almost surreal. Because, you know, you have this culture that is sort of, that at one time was very insular in the Black church. And you have these songs that are passed down, and the way that we sing them even has been passed down for lots of ways, for lots of generations. So it was a very interesting thing. And I don't, you know, lots of people can say lots of things, but that was an extremely powerful, and I would definitely say coded political message, you know, getting us to think back to those times where we, you know, passed our messages on where people couldn't hear and understand what each other was saying. And that's very powerful. So I just wanted to say that. And
hey, Carly, you know, real quick to kind of follow up on that, and I know we're running out of time, but I think if we go back and look at the history of oppression, you know, in this country and everywhere, and the role that religion has played in that. And there's no doubt over the next couple of weeks, it's already started, you know, all the references to marriage equality and the Bible and what Jesus said and what he meant and on and on and on. But that there was a time when that same book and these was used to restrict interracial marriage. And so, you know, times have changed. Exactly. So I think that when these good Christian folks start talking about that, I think there's a history of how religion is very often used to oppress people, to keep people down, and to stop social justice movements and progressive movements from moving forward.
Absolutely.
And that being said, we are wrapping up another show here at the Houston Indie Media, or at the Houston Indie Media program here on KPFT. Shout out to Courtney, our board op for the revolution, who keeps us sounding amazing week after week. And also, thank you so much to our guests. And also, just a really great roundtable conversation. There's a lot to celebrate and still a lot to struggle for, but we're getting there little by little.
And Jacob is here, and he's always here. So Jacob is here. He just let me drive today.
Oh. Yeah, and once again, on behalf of the whole collective, I think I can say congratulations to all those folks that are getting married. I was kind of really happy when I saw that the first couple that got married in Harris County was a Latina couple. Oh. So congratulations to everyone out there, folks.
Don't hate the media, be the media. Love wins. Peace.
There will be no doom.
KPFT is seeking prospective volunteers to help in our music library. Our music library is a massive resource for our DJs and listeners. Volunteers will be assigned a number of different tasks, from refiling CDs to converting music for inclusion into the upgrade of our music library focused on digital. We're also looking for people who can spot up-and-coming bands to feature on our HD3 music stream. Successful volunteers will be team players who work well with others, have the ability to alphabetize, and can manage multiple tasks. Shifts happen weekdays, 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. This is an unpaid volunteer gig, but it is one of the most fun times ever for anyone into music, music discovery, and turning others on to outstanding music. Interested? Drop an email to music@kpft.org.